You're listening to Design Atlas Season 4.
Close your eyes for just a moment and imagine a world where creativity isn't just a tool for design, but a force that ignites change. Change that echoes through the corridors of both environmental and social landscapes. Now, open your eyes. In today's episode, our guest has not only envisioned a world where creativity is a tool that ignites change, but is also actively shaping it. She is a designer who has not only mastered the art of illustration and design, but has also transformed into a creative director on a mission.
And we just try and inspire people to say, look, you can make a difference. You can build a world which isn't currently working for us. You can change society through design.
That's Chrissy Levitt, with a background in illustration and design communications from the prestigious Royal College of Art in London. Chrissy has evolved into an accomplished creative director and the founder of Creative Conscience, a global organization that champions, trains, and rewards creative thinking for social and environmental impact. Chrissy is not just a designer. She's a motivational speaker who believes in the power of creativity to drive positive change. Her work spans across multiple countries and creative disciplines, from branding, packaging, and print, to structural design, digital exhibitions, film, animation, illustration, and conceptual drawing. But it's not just about design for Chrissy. It's about a set of beliefs that drive her work.
She firmly stands by the idea that anything is possible, emphasizing idea-based design, intelligent thinking, and skilled crafting. Moreover, she is dedicated to inspiring and mentoring the next generation of creative thinkers, encouraging them to use their talents for social and environmental impact. Currently based in London, Chrissy focuses on designing training workshops and behavior change initiatives solely for social and environmental impact. As a TEDx speaker and a positive creative activist, she has been a catalyst for change, inspiring and coaching hundreds of creative minds to develop game-changing projects around the world.
For a start, I was hopeless at school, absolutely hopeless. I couldn't read and write and spell or any of those things. And I'm still really hopeless at those things. One of my sons actually teases me and sort of says, oh, will you do the colouring in? Because he's a physicist. So I kind of didn't really have a choice but do anything bar creative stuff, because I was just so completely hopeless at school. And having kind of done a foundation course, I actually wanted to be a jeweller. And I was told that you'll never make a living as a jeweler. And I desperately wanted to make a living and be independent. And so I kind of went into illustration for my degree, and then ended up doing graphic design and communications at the Royal College of Art, but just kind of by chance.
Chrissy discovered that her path into graphic design was not a meticulously planned route, but a series of fortunate events. The design world beckoned, not as a meticulously charted course, but as a consequence of the unique opportunities and privileges bestowed upon her during her school days. In essence, Chrissy didn't choose graphic design, it chose her, a testament to the unforeseen turns that can lead us to our true calling.
I sort of came out of the RCA in the middle of a recession, and just ended up freelancing for some amazing human beings, and then just sort of started a career as a freelancer, and I was always a freelancer. And so that's how I got into graphic design, really. I kind of fell into it, and the design generally was because I was just so shy at school. Well, it was back in the day, really, when people didn't go on and do MAs and things like that. It was a bit kind of unheard of. And I entered a competition, and I was kind of more of an illustrator. And I did this, a tutor of mine, a really beautiful human being called David Shaw, who is no longer with us, I'm afraid. It was a fantastic artist. There was this competition that was advertised on the art room in the art bar at this art school that I went to in Canterbury, and it was a Cecil Beaton Vogue Illustration Award. And it was just this poster on the wall in this sort of grotty art bar, and I said, I think I'm going to enter that. And I asked my tutor, and he said, yeah, go for it. So I sent in these prints, and to my utter amazement, I was one of the finalists in this competition. And they had a show up in London in the Royal Academy, and I went along to this show, and I was horribly shy, really, really shy and insecure. And I kind of went to this show and this private view at the Royal Academy, and I sat, well, no, I didn't sat, I stood there. I didn't speak to anyone throughout the entire thing. And then about 5 minutes before the end of this thing, this funny little old man came up to me and he said, you know what, dear, you should apply for the Royal College of Art. And I thought, well, what's the Royal College? I didn't even know what it was. And I sort of thought, oh, okay. So I went sort of skipping back to Canterbury, which is this really small town in the UK where, you know, it's very sort of countrified and a bit hokey. And I just said to my tutors, I'm going to apply to the Royal College. And they all kind of laughed at me, and no one had awe, and it was all a ridiculous thing. And I applied, and, you know, to everyone's amusement and amazement, I think I managed to get in. And it was in the days when the UK, we got free kind of education. You didn't have to pay for it. It was, you know, we had a kind of more of a socialist model, I suppose, where as long as you worked hard and you were good enough, you could go to university for nothing. And so it's a very different experience now for young people. So I do feel incredibly privileged. And basically that's why I went there, because of this little old man. And really that little and that old, but when you're young, you know, I suppose you think people are older than they actually are. Anyway, he was an illustrator called Quinton Blake, who is a kind of a very famous illustrator in the UK. Well, he's Sir Quinton Blake, and he used to do all the illustrations for Roald Dahl books, and he was just a really kind of famous illustrator. But he was the one who spoke to me, and the only person that spoke to me through this sort of horrendous experience at the Royal Academy. But that I've since wrote to him a number of years ago and told him that that conversation changed the course of my life.
In the wake of Chrissy's academic pursuits and amid the evolving landscape of her creative journey, a pivotal conversation transpired, one that resonates as a testament to the transformative power of dialogue.
It's quite telling, really, that you can just, like you guys, you know, you're putting yourselves out there, you're having conversations with people, and those conversations can change your ideas in the course of your career. You know, for me, leaving art school, and there weren't any kind of jobs. People just weren't taking on junior designers. And so I was kind of forced into a position where I was working for about three different people as a kind of an assistant, I would say, to independent designers. So one of them was an amazing female, or both of them actually were female designers, called Chrissy Charlton, who trained with a really famous typographer called Herbert Spencer, who'd written like typography books in the 50s and stuff. And so Chrissy was an amazing mentor to me. And as I'd sort of been more of an illustrator and a mark maker, she taught me a lot about typography.
Leaving school at a time when the design industry was hesitant to embrace emerging talents, Chrissy faced the challenge of securing a foothold in the professional realm. Forced into a position of working for multiple mentors, including the remarkable Chrissy Charlton, a female designer with a rich typographic heritage, the experience became a turning point. Chrissy's mentors not only transitioned her as an illustrator and marker, but also instilled a deep understanding of typography, marking a significant evolution in her design journey. The convergence of these narratives underscores the profound influence of conversations and the resilience required to navigate and thrive in the ever-changing landscape of the creative world.
Yeah, or not such great people. I mean, I did end up working with lots of big agents. You know, when you're freelance, the great thing about freelance is you never get bored. You meet loads and loads of people in the industry. You get to go to loads of, you know, when things picked up, you know, I was going into agencies all over London, big, small, working on, you know, crazy projects, really diverse work and stuff like that.
And one of those really diverse, crazy projects led Chrissy to Cambodia. This project, which was for an NGO representing the local area, underscored the power of visual communication through infographics, but also highlighted the importance of addressing critical issues such as landmine awareness to safeguard the well-being of communities.
So there were lots of people coming back into Cambodia because they were trying to have fair elections, and they were refugees from Thailand and they didn't know about the landmines and explosives.
And while Chrissy thoroughly enjoyed these projects and working freelance for all these clients, a dark chapter arose in her life.
For a number of years, I just got really, really depressed. And I had a kind of midlife crisis, I suppose, some sort of breakdown in the frustration of working on stuff which was beautiful and lovely and looked gorgeous and was, you know, I got into luxury brands and that sort of thing. I was just miserable.
But it was during her midlife crisis that she began to get a clear perspective on how she could leverage her design knowledge and skill set to make change in the world, both socially and environmentally. And it was with this idea that the beginnings of a community working together on her vision took hold.
This idea of trying to get creatives to focus on social environmental impact, and the course that was a 3-month course, a landmark course that was all about building a community project. And out of that course, it was called a self-expression and leadership course. Out of that course came this idea of creative conscience. And it was a side hustle. You know, I was working for a branding agency, and I was like the lead creative and on the board and all of this nonsense. And the creative conscience was this thing that I did on the side. And, you know, to be fair, it's a community built organization. So people in the agency got behind it, friends got behind it. Lots of sort of famous designers said, yeah, we'll join in. And it was more, okay, right, how does this work? How do I feed the kids and pay the bills and run this? And so it was kind of, you know, it was a side hustle that slowly took over. As I gently let go of a kind of my old life, if you like. And so it was built by a community. We're 10 years old now, so it's, you know, we've been going quite some time, and we're a charity now, so we've got charity status. And then it changed from being a side hustle to being, you know, kind of what I do.
With the goal of combining creativity and impact, a digital platform emerged. A community designed to train, reward, and empower the minds of creative thinkers, urging them to channel their talents towards social and environmental good. A decade ago, when this idea unfurled its wings into the world, the landscape was starkly different. Conversations about harnessing creative prowess for social and environmental impact were scarce. Undeterred, the pioneers behind the initiative of Creative Conscience pressed on, building the foundation for what would become a transformative force in the realms of design, creativity, and positive change. The journey began with the inception of a competition, an invitation to the creative community to join forces in wielding their design skills for numerous causes greater than themselves.
So 10 years ago, no one was talking about ocean plastic or the climate crisis, right? And we just thought we were a bunch of nutters. So really, and it kind of came about, you know, I told you that story about entering the competition, and then that competition led to a big change in my life. So the thought why don't we set up a competition? Because that way we can get people engaged through that. We can use that as a funnel. And if our industry isn't involved, let's get the next generation involved. So over the years, I've been a part-time, you know, visiting lecturer at various colleges and stuff like that and unis. So I had a bit of experience around that. So I thought, well, let's get universities, let's set up a competition and then let's go and talk to universities and then we can infiltrate the creative industries through the next generation. And then they'll go into industry and then they'll create change from the bottom up because the people at the top are comfy and they don't get what we're on about. And so it was like stealth, you know, like a stealth army, a brilliant, mischievous game changers. So we set up this competition and we just sort of built a kind of really clunky old website. And the agency I was at the time very kindly sort of supported that. And so people did, but we built it like in downtime and stuff. And we just chucked it up there, out there. We didn't have any kind of marketing plan or strategy or anything like that. We just built it. And we were just blown away that people just sent us stuff and it was all free. You know, it's free to enter. There were any fees or anything like that. So we had started getting these amazing projects and not from the UK. They were coming in from all over the world and it just took off. And so that was 10 years ago. So we still run that global competition.
The creative conscious community embraces individuals at any age and discipline. Whether you're an architect, a fashion designer, a typographer, or a product enthusiast, the doors are wide open. Categories blur, and diversity thrives. It's not confined to a singular path, but a celebration of creative diversity. In this realm, the scope of projects extends beyond the conventional, reaching into the realms of architecture, fashion, typography, and product design. Anything that sparks curiosity and aligns with the community's overarching goals of fostering social and environmental impact. The parameters are intentionally broad, rejecting the confines of a narrow perspective.
The creative conscious model is one of collaboration and shared purpose. They are not merely seeking funds. Their goal is to build a collective narrative, inviting young minds to contribute their creativity towards causes that resonate with their mission. It's a departure from the norm, a deviation from the well-trodden path, and a venture into a realm where creative expression converges with a commitment to positive change. It's a space where boundaries dissolve and creativity finds its purpose.
What happens with that is you get someone whose parent or mother was abused or whose father was an alcoholic or someone who suffered from racism or someone who's seen the direct effects of the climate crisis or, you know, geopolitical refugeeism or, you know, so it's led by our community.
Not only do they run this competition, but they also work on other initiatives, sparking inspiration and creativity around the world.
So yeah, it's just been the most amazing, inspiring and humbling kind of thing. And then outside of that, we also do other things. So we run events. So we've got one coming up actually around creativity and mental health. And we just try and inspire people to say, look, you can make a difference. And you can build a world which isn't currently working for us. You can change society through design and through systems and art and activism. So that's kind of basically what we do.
In our conversation with Chrissy about the submissions to the competition, she enthusiastically described the work as not just brilliant, but profoundly powerful, bold, and captivating. According to her, these designs have the remarkable ability to compel individuals to perceive issues in a fresh and unique light. Chrissy emphasized the abundance of exceptionally skilled designers proficient in effectively communicating intricate and challenging topics.
They're just brilliant bits of work that are really, really powerful. And yet they're coming from people who are starting out. You know, they're not all coming from like some big fancy ad agency. And they're really powerful. I think it's celebrating that and showcasing that work and sharing it and getting it out into the world and making impact. You know, that That's really important, I think, for what humanity needs right now. We really need to sort of hold hands and come together. The climate crisis is now a communication issue. What we as designers and communicators, we've not done a good job in communicating to people what's happening out coming at us. So how can we let people know, and not in a sort of scary hide under the duvet, you know, anxiety way? How can we get people to celebrate and rejoice what's possible and take part in movements that are going to change the world in a positive way? Because I think a lot of people want to create change, but they don't know how. Like, they might have a brilliant side hustle, but they don't have the community or the network around them, and they don't know how to find that network, or they're not sure what that looks like, or how do you go about it.
In reflecting on the Creative Conscience program, Chrissy acknowledges that its true strength lies in the sense of community it cultivates, a sanctuary where individuals find a secure and supportive space. Within this shared journey, there's a palpable camaraderie as participants wholeheartedly cheer on their peers concurrently navigating the course. What adds a unique dimension to this program is its commitment to a virtuous cycle. Every penny from the fees invested by participants funnels directly back into the program's work as a charitable endeavor. It's not merely about constructing something worthwhile. It's about actively contributing to a positive impact. In this symbiotic relationship, participants not only build something good for themselves, but also play a role in a larger narrative about doing something genuinely good for others.
When we are held accountable against the things that we say we're going to do, we are more likely to succeed in the tasks that we set ourselves.
As we draw the curtain of our exploration of the Creative Conscience program, one cannot overlook the profound impact of its community-centric approach. Chrissy's insights have revealed that the true strength of the program lies not just in its curriculum, but in the establishment of a sanctuary, a space where individuals are embraced by a secure and supportive community. In the echoes of Chrissy's words, we find the essence of the Creative Conscience program, a beacon illuminating the path where creativity converges with compassion, forging a narrative where doing good for oneself seamlessly intertwines with doing something genuinely good for others. In a world that so desperately needs kind and good-hearted actions, Chrissy Leavitt is an example to follow, not only through her commitment to the community she has helped create, but as a force for good by achieving her dreams and empowering others to do the same.
For more information about Chrissy Leavitt and the Creative Conscience community, visit our website, designatlaspod.com. Don't forget to follow our show on Instagram at designatlaspod or join our Slack community. All these details and more can be found in the show notes of the episode. Love what we're doing on Design Atlas? Make sure to give us a positive review on your favorite podcast streaming platform. We'd really appreciate it. Stay tuned for our next episode, which launches next Thursday, featuring Margot Stoney, a graphic designer that has cultivated her own design studio called High Mountain Creative. Her studio focuses on collaboration with conservation groups, nonprofits, and sustainable brands dedicated to environmental preservation. Located in the backdrop of Montana's natural beauty, each design project undertaken by Margot Stoney becomes a contribution to a larger narrative of environmental advocacy. You're listening to Design Atlas, Season 4.